නමෝ තස්ස භගවතෝ අරහතෝ සම්මා සම්බුද්දස්ස නමෝ තස්ස භගවතෝ අරහතෝ සම්මා සම්බුද්දස්ස නමෝ තස්ස භගවතෝ අරහතෝ සම්මා සම්බුද්දස්ස Actually, we were discussing a few suttas related to samadhi or the concentration, and I thought of taking another sutta which also talks about concentration. And probably you can remember that we were discussing about four types of samadhi. The first one mentioning that helping to abide in the present moment with a very pleasant, blissful state, very much samatha samadhi. And then Buddha mentioned about another type which is helping to have a clairvoyance where one can recognize the divine eye, various skills related to divine eye. And the third type Buddha explained in somewhat related to vipassana, that is something helping to develop mindfulness and clear comprehension. And the last type he mentioned, that which helps to abandon all the fetters. And this Upakkilesa Sutta actually talks about the second one, where the foremost in this clairvoyance, foremost in this divine eye is Venerable Anuruddha, and how Anuruddha got some information or instructions from the Buddha while at a particular place. So that story is available in this Upakkilesa Sutta. And other than that, there are some very interesting information related to the Sangha. Actually, how sometimes Sangha get into trouble or get into conflicts, and how Buddha tried to intervene, and even sometimes certain stubborn and adamant members of the Sangha didn't even listen to Buddha, and how Buddha then left them and went on searching few others, in the sense searching some amenable Sangha. And likewise, very interesting and heartfelt incidents are reported in this particular sutta. So rather than immediately going to the samadhi part, I thought of discussing some aspects of that background story as well. So I am going to read this sutta. So in one occasion, Buddha was living in the Kosambi in Gosithas Park, and at that time the monks residing at Kosambi were having quarrels, brawling, and various kinds of disputes, stabbing each other with verbal daggers, with verbal disputes and everything. So they are not happy, they are having quarrels among each other. And then a particular bhikkhu informed that to the Buddha, and then Buddha asked them to come and look at him, and then they appeared in front of the Buddha, and then Buddha tried to advise them. So Buddha mentioned, enough bhikkhus, let there be no quarreling, brawling, wrangling or dispute. When this was said, the bhikkhus were not ready to listen. Now you can imagine, actually Buddha is the teacher, the supreme teacher, and he is on behalf of him, actually the monks have gone forth, but now these monks are not even ready to listen to him. Now once Buddha asked them to stop quarrels, One monk is now telling the Buddha, "Wait, Venerable Sir, let the Blessed One, the Lord of the Dhamma, live at ease, devoted to a pleasant abiding here and now. We are the ones who will be responsible for this quarreling, brawling, wrangling and dispute." So basically, he is asking not to get intervened. So he is asking, do not interrupt in our matters. Do not intervene in our matter. So we are the ones started this dispute, so we will sort it out. You don't need to put your hand. That is, in another terms, what this particular monk is telling to the Buddha. And for the second time, Buddha tried to advise. That particular monk again answered the same way. For the third time, again Buddha tried to advise. The same response came from the monks. Now you can recognize how adamant, how stubborn, and how high-minded they are. So basically, they are not really ready to listen even to the Buddha. They are with a lot of conceit. So conceit is something that can come up due to various reasons. Actually, monkhood is another area where the conceit is highly probable. Because, you know, as monks, people are venerating the monks and they are being well supported and they know a fair amount of Dhamma and they are the ones preaching Dhamma, they are the ones admonishing people, and sometimes people are keeping them on the pedestal and again come and pay respect to them, and all these situations can lead a particular monk to a very conceited person. So if they are not handling it properly, if they are not recognizing the conceit arising in their mind, so they are going to be a disaster. So this particular monk can be a very high-minded, really boasting, and again not ready to listen to anyone, extremely conceited kind of a mindset can be arisen in a particular monk. So this is even available today, and you can recognize that it is available during the Buddha's time, and it is really available in today's time as well. So there are monks who are not ready to listen at all. So they don't bother whether the other monk is a senior monk, another monk is with good qualities. So we need to live according to the Buddha's Vinaya discipline or the Buddhist monastic code. So none of these actually sometimes monks consider, and they simply want to win. They simply want to win their view. They want to show their sort of view. So they want to be the first. They want to be the. They want to take the high post. Likewise, there are many situations even today how monks are getting into disputes. And after getting the answer from that particular monk, Buddha actually started telling certain things. Actually, they are coming as certain verses. So those verses, they translated by Bhikkhu Bodhi like this: when many voices shout at once, none considers himself as a fool. Though the Sangha is being split, none thinks himself to be at fault. Now basically no one is ready to listen. Everyone want to put their view, they want to win their view, but none of them want to listen and come down. Now listening is something that we really want to have, because sometimes without listening to another person, we can't recognize what others are trying to tell, and whether we are wrong or whether they are wrong. And therefore, in order to listen, we need to have a fair amount of patience. We have to give some time for others to talk. But most of the time, we are not ready to listen. And this is not only related to the monks. Actually, even in the lay community, say you are living a family life. So there are sometimes your husband wants to talk to you, your wife wants to talk to you, your children wants to talk to you. Probably your friend wants to talk to you, but you are not ready to listen. So this is sometimes happening because we are very much adamant. We don't want to get any advice from others, and we simply want to win our view. We simply want to tell, I am the boss. So that kind of attitude is commonly available among the monks and among the lay community. Everywhere this kind of view is possible, this kind of behavior is possible, and no one wants to think that I am wrong. So we are not ready to accept our own fault, rather we want to tell that I am the boss, I am the perfect person, you are wrong, I am correct. So as a result of that, what happened is, whatever the conflict arisen will continue. There won't be any settlement, rather the whatever the conflict arisen will continue. And then Buddha further mentioned, they have forgotten thoughtful speech. They talk obsessed by words alone. Uncurbed their mouths, they bawl at will. None knows what leads him so to act. So various defilements are operating within our minds, and we have become very much the victims of those defilements. And now defilements are operating, and so they don't know what they are talking. So they are not thoughtful, they are not mindful about their speech, and simply they are talking. And as a result of that, there is no restrainment in their verbal act. So there is no vachi samvara. There is no any restrainment related to the words. And then, he abused me, he struck me, he defeated me, he robbed me. In those who harbor thoughts like this, hatred will never be allayed. So basically, this is a very common very popular verse available in Dhammapada, Akkocchimam Avadimam. So likewise, it is going on in the Dhammapada also. So Vyasa Buddha mentioned, if someone is thinking that someone has abused me, someone has struck me, and someone has defeated me, he robbed me, again and again he is thinking like that. So continuously harboring kind of ill will, so as a result of that he can't put aside the anger, he can't put aside the revengeful thoughts arising in his mind, because again and again whatever has happened he is recalling, again and again he is finding that he is wrong and he is correct, the other person is wrong, other person has defeated him, other person has struck him, other person has abused him. So there is no any kind of a forgiving attitude within oneself, rather one again and again burning with anger. As a result of that, what Buddha mentioned is that hatred will never be allayed. So the hatred will remain in the mind rather than being abandoned. But on the other hand, Buddha mentioned, he abused me, he struck me, he defeated me, he robbed me. In those who do not harbor thoughts like this, hatred will really be allayed. So if one is not again and again thinking like this, something has happened, probably the other party may be wrong, you may be correct, but still you are not thinking again and again, you are not continuing any kind of a prapancha, you are not continuing any kind of conceptual proliferation. Say for example, someone has neglected you, someone has hinted you, someone has even abused you. Maybe it has happened about 1 week ago, 2 weeks ago. So why are you still thinking about it? Why are we still harboring the same thoughts again and again? So incident has happened several weeks ago. Why are we still continuing to think like that? Why are we again and again remembering that incident? So he might have used some harsh words only for 1 minute. But how many times that we recall that incident and harbor the same words again and again within our mind? What's going to happen within our mind if we are continuing like that? So basically you may understand, okay, whenever you recall that incident, whenever you reminding yourself about those words, you are hurting yourself. So rather than allowing the mind to get healed, so what we do, again and again hurting ourselves. That person is no more with you, he might have gone. But you are again and again harming your mind, hurting your mind by recalling, by reminding those words he has mentioned. So the incident has happened only once, but we are again and again hurting ourselves by thinking, by our own conceptual proliferation. Probably sometimes, or probably most of the time, what happens is that the other person might have mentioned only few words, but we may be multiplying that, we may be increasing the intensity of that words, those words, and again and again hurting ourselves. So this is what typically happens. Then anger arises again and again, we start burning, and ultimately we may even call him and blame. We may even write a very strong letter. We probably go and blame, meet him and blame, and we may even get into quarrels. Because within ourselves we are thinking too much, harboring thoughts of ill will, multiplying what the thing has happened, and ultimately we are in a big trouble. So again, a very interesting and very known verse Buddha mentioned, Nahi verena verani sammanti da kujachanam, averenata sammanti esa dhammo sanantano. For in this world, hatred is never allayed by further acts of hate. It is allayed by non-hatred. That is the fixed and ageless law. So if one is trying to harbor ill will, trying to maintain ill will within one's mind and take the revenge, so that will never going to settle the situation, settle the conflict. But the moment you start forgiving, moment you start accepting, on the other hand, the moment you start accepting that the world is not perfect, we are living in a completely imperfect world, and the people are fairly governed by various defilements, and sometimes they don't know what they are doing because they are simply slaves to their defilements. And as a result of that, what happens? And they are simply acting like slaves. Now we are then in a conflict with slaves. They are slaves of defilements, and we are now trying to correct them, trying to attack them, trying to abuse them, and then we also become victims of defilements. But on the other hand, if we are able to recognize the situation, if we can see the big picture, and probably we have a chance to give it up, we have a chance to forgive, and if we have any mistake, we can apologize. So likewise, then there's a possibility of settlement. Then there's a possibility of leaving aside all the problems and again getting on as usual. So it can be applied even to a very small family setup. It can be applied to several families, even to a village setup, maybe to your office, maybe to a college, maybe to a department, maybe within the various groups, various teams, and even within several governments or within several countries. Actually, if you see the today's world, the whole world is burning with anger. People are preparing weapons like in a competition. And whatever the Buddha mentioned not to do, and they are doing it. So the world is in the brink of a war because of hatred. And we think that the world is really developed, but actually we can see how undeveloped their minds are. So even the trivial things are now going to very high risk, endangering the whole life of the earth. We can see how they are not ready to forgive another person, another party. They always want to defeat another party. Always they want to have the victory by maybe defeating another party. So this is how the human world is now operating. You can see how Buddha is approaching the problem. Buddha mentioned now, if you are continuing like this, there won't be any kind of a settlement. There won't be any kind of a peace. But on the other hand, if you, the moment that you are able to recognize, okay, let's stop this, let's forgive ourselves, let's apologize, let's come to a kind of an agreement, let's discuss, let's try to find out ways and means to settle the conflict. So that would be the approach that we have to take. And Buddha further mentioned, those others do not recognize that that here we should restrain ourselves. But those wise ones who realize this at once end all their enmity. Now say for example, if two people are in conflict, and at least one person is mindful, and he thinks that whatever the words, whatever the harsh words I am telling is not worthy of telling, not suitable of telling. And the other party may be in a rage. So why should I getting into that kind of a rage? Why should I be a part of that conflict? So if the wise person start thinking like that, he may simply abandon the conflict. Rather than continuing, rather than getting into trouble, putting his own hand, he may abandon the thing because he understand, okay, there is no point, there is not worthy of doing it. And Buddha again give a very interesting simile here. Breakers of bonds and murderers, those who steal cattle, horses, wealth, those who pillage the entire realm, when even these can act together, why can you not do so too? So Buddha tell the monks, now there are thieves, there are murderers, there are even thieves who steal cattle, and they also sometimes get together. They also act as a team. Then why can't you act as a team? You can see there are teams who are maybe doing a bad thing, but they concord among each other. They have a good leadership. Probably they have a good kind of a teamwork. Even they are doing the bad work, even when they are involved with bad activities. So if even they are doing some bad, unwholesome activities, if they are able to maintain a teamwork, if they are able to maintain some kind of a relationship, a good relationship among themselves, then why can't the monks maintain a good relationship among themselves? Why can't they respect each other? Why can't they live as an amenable team? So this is the question Buddha is asking. And Buddha further mentioned, if one can find a worthy friend, a virtue. Actually, this is now going to a different theme. Actually, I like to share with you some recent incident happened to me. Actually, even at Nisarnavane, actually we also get into sometimes arguments. Sometimes people are not respecting each other, and again they are not ready to accept someone else's advice because they also are with conceited mind. They think that they are the ones, they are the accomplished ones. Sometimes they misunderstand, they have path fruition. So likewise, there are various misunderstandings which cause them to think high-minded. That cause them to be really conceited. So what happened is then they don't want to even accept someone else's advice, even some elder monk's advice. So then they sometimes even challenge the elder monks. So this actually has happened to me recently. So I don't want to tell names. But if we know this particularly other monk is basically with conceited mind, he's a slave of conceit. He can't understand what's really going on. He has become a slave of defilements. Then probably we can give it up. So it has happened, so I simply given it up. So then things have settled. So without it, then the conflict would continue more and more. So then I have to again and again get into sort of arguments. Again and again I have to spend or waste a lot of time on these kind of trivial matters. But the moment I give up, thinking okay, the other party is completely conceited, completely gone wrong with their defilements, so let them have their senses maybe later time, but right now I am backing off. Let me give it up. So later let them understand their own fault. So if that happens in every time, then at least we can settle. But when none of the parties are ready to give up, when none of the parties are ready to settle, then the conflicts may continue. It may continue for years, and even the monks, even the nuns, they start having kind of jealousy, have kind of malicious speech. All these things are possible. Because sometimes what happens is, when a particular person is being respected, the other people are not happy about it. Suppose a senior monk being respected, junior monks are coming and venerating him, say lay people are coming and venerating him, but when that is being seen by another monk who is searching for some respect, searching for some veneration, but may not be really worthy of veneration, may not be still worthy of veneration or respect, then he may find this the senior monk being kind of he may start having jealousy of with this senior monk. Then the conflicts can arise. He may start attacking him. He may start not respecting the senior monk. So these things are possible. Now you can recognize that even when the Buddha wants to admonish, the other monks are telling you simply, Bante, you simply mind your own business. We'll settle the situation. So that is the incident happened during the Buddha's time. Now the monks are simply telling that to the Buddha. Now you can understand then why not it is happening right now. So now also this is happening. Monks are not respecting their teachers. Monks are not respecting the elders. So this is even happening today. Now this is where the defilements are in operation, rather than at this kind of situation, rather than thinking that we as persons, as self, if we can understand what's really going on, how people have become victims of the defilements, then there's a possibility of forgiving. Then there's a possibility of settlement. And after mentioning all these things, Buddha now coming to a kind of a conclusion, okay, I better go for a seclusion. I better abandon this group of monks. I better go for a seclusion. So now that is being indicated in the next few verse Buddha is mentioning. If one can find a worthy friend, a virtuous, steadfast companion, then overcome all threats of danger and walk with him content and mindful. So if you are able to find a good friend, a good companion, a virtuous person, who is also a diligent person, who is also have the mindset to attain Nibbana, nothing else. So then he can be considered as a good friend, can be considered as a worthy companion. Then you can put aside all your other things and you also can sort of get along with that particular person, because you understood, you recognize this person is a worthy person. This person is going in the correct direction. So you found a very good companion, very good friend. On such situation, it is really great. So you have found a Kalyanamitta. So better have company with that person. And then putting aside all the different other things, you may get along with that particular person. But on the other hand, but if one finds no worthy person, no worthy friend, no virtuous, steadfast companion, then as a king leaves his conquered realm, walk like a tusker in the woods alone. So this is a very interesting verse, even highlighted in the Khagga Visana Sutta of Sutta Nipata. So Buddha mentioned, if you are not able to find a good companion, a virtuous person, a steadfast companion, you are not able to find such a worthy person, then better live alone. It is not a good idea to be with fools. So here Buddha mentioned, as a king who conquered the realm is now going to leave that realm that he has conquered. Probably he has spent years, probably he has spent a lot of time, probably he has spent a lot of effort, even dedicated his army to win the country. But he decided to abandon that, leave the country. Like a king who leaves his conquered realm, conquered country. Now Buddha mentioned, walk like a tusker in the woods alone. Now this is a very interesting simile here giving. Because sometimes you may have done something really with a lot of effort. You went through a lot of hardships. And that is how you earned it. That is how you won the situation. But later you find out, okay, the people around me are not worthy of attachment. Not worthy of companionship. So rather than finding a companionship with fools, better live alone. So that's a kind of a critical decision that one is taking. On the other hand, you have your own confidence. It is not that you become kind of a conceited, high-minded person. Rather, you have to be a wise person. You need to understand the situation. So you are the leader probably, you have come to a very high position, but after reaching that position, if you understood, okay, the others are not worthy of being, having a company, others are merely fools, then better leave them and be alone. So this is a very interesting situation that Buddha highlighted even in the Kaggavisana Sutta. Kaggavisana Sutta comes in Suttanipata, where Buddha again and again highlights how one is decided to live alone. Like a rhinoceros horn. You know that among the various animals who are having horns, rhinoceros is the one who is having a single horn. A single, very powerful, very strong single horn. So that is how Buddha depicts a monk who has decided to live alone. Not because that he can't manage with others, he can't move with others, but when he find out that the others are not worthy of being with, others are not worthy of having any companionship. So rather than being with fools, he decided to live alone. Better it is to walk alone, there is no companionship with fools. Walk alone and do no evil, at ease like a tusker in the woods. Now, after indicating these words, now Buddha abandoned the bhikkhus. Now that is what Buddha did. So he tried to settle the conflict. He tried to admonish the Sangha. So they are not ready to listen. Again and again Buddha tried. Now what he did? He simply abandoned the Sangha. He is now going alone. Now when he is going alone, now he is reaching a village called Balaka Lonakara. So this is the village name, and there is one monk living alone. He is called Venerable Bhagu. So Venerable Bhagu saw that Buddha is approaching, and then he arranged a seat for the Buddha, and then washed his feet and asked him to come in, and he paid homage to the Buddha. And then Buddha is asking, I hope you are keeping well, Bhikkhu. I hope you are comfortable. I hope you are not having any trouble getting alms food. So this is how Buddha typically sort of having the typical amenable discussion, starts the discussion, and he's asking, you are doing well, hope you are doing well, you are getting enough food, so you are having a comfort. So that is how Buddha is asking. So then Venerable Bhagu answers, I am keeping well, Blessed One, I am comfortable, and I am not having any trouble getting alms food. So then Venerable Bhagu answers that he is doing well, everything is fine, and then Buddha blessed this particular Venerable Bhagu, and he urged, roused and gladdened the Venerable Bhagu and talked Dhamma, and after that he again left that place. Now Venerable Bhagu is living alone, and Buddha praised that, he asked the situation and he is doing well, and he given a Dhamma discourse to Venerable Bhagu, and then he left to another place where three monks are living with peace. Now we can see a completely different or completely opposite situation at another place. It is not many monks, but three monks are living really cordially. Now an interesting situation happened here also, very kind of drama-like situation here. Now these three monks are living at Eastern Bamboo Park. And the three monks are Venerable Anuruddha, Venerable Nandiya and Venerable Kimbila. So they are the monks who are living there. And at that time, that particular park being sort of guarded by a park keeper. And that particular park keeper see that the Buddha is approaching. But he didn't recognize Buddha as the Buddha. Now you can see sometimes we think Buddha can be easily recognized. He is with lot of splendor that people can quickly recognize among others that who is Buddha. He may be with a very tall, very splendid, very glamorous kind of a view. So this is how we sometimes think. But here you can see, so the park keeper didn't recognize Buddha. So he thinks he's just another monk. And he know very well that the three monks who are staying in the park are doing really well. So they are very cordial, they are very helpful to each other, they are living very peacefully, and they are trying hard to practice. So they are doing a really marvelous job. So the park keeper is quite happy about them. Now he didn't want to disturb them. Now park keeper is also a good person. So he has noticed that the three monks living in the bamboo park are doing really well. They are trying hard to accomplish their say spiritual goal. Now he don't want them to get disturbed by any visitor. So therefore he refused, or he avoid Buddha to come in. And he mentioned, the park keeper saw the Blessed One coming in the distance and told him, do not enter this park recluse. There are three clansmen here seeking their own good. Do not disturb them. You can see the situation that a park keeper is now stopping the teacher, not allowing him to go and meet the students. But he don't know that he's a teacher, that who are in the park are the students. He thinks he's just another recluse, another monk. So he don't want to get disturbed. So by the way, interestingly, Buddha also didn't want to defend him. Buddha didn't want to tell that I am the teacher. So that is the real beauty of the Buddha. Some probably you can remember even at the Dhatu Vibhanga Sutta, how Buddha approached Venerable Pukkusati. So he actually taken permission from Venerable Pukkusati to get into that particular place. So I explained that situation while we were doing the Dhatu Vibhanga Sutta. So likewise, so Buddha's this tremendous humility as the great teacher, he didn't want to really show off in a way. He didn't want to really look down the others, so he always want to show himself. There is no something like that. Rather, he simply be a simple human being. Rather than showing that he is the teacher, he also simply living as a typical, normal human being, ordinary person. So that quality is really marvelous quality, because always people want to highlight themselves. People always want to show that they are the person, they are the boss. So that is the attitude that people are having because of their high conceit. But Buddha, being who is completely free from conceit, now simply living as an ordinary person, he don't want to show off. And when he is approaching the park keeper simply don't want to allow him to go in, thinking that he may be another recluse. But fortunately, here Venerable Anuruddha, here the park keeper being speaking to the Buddha, and he understood now this is the Buddha coming to see them. Fortunately, so this has happened. Otherwise, the park keeper may not allow Buddha to come in at all. But Venerable Anuruddha noticed, he heard that the discussion going on with the Buddha and the park keeper. And he immediately come to the situation and he mentioned to the park keeper that this is our teacher. This is the Blessed One. This is our great teacher. Please allow him to come in. Now park keeper is allowing Buddha to come in, and then he went to the other monks, Venerable Kimbila and Venerable Baddiya Nandiya, and he quickly asked them also to come and meet the Buddha. Actually, he first accompanied the Buddha and asked others also to come, and then one of them prepared the, taken the robe, one of them prepared the seat, and one of them start washing the feet of the Buddha. And then Buddha sat down to the seat, and they washed his feet, and all three pay homage to the Buddha. and they sat one side of the Buddha. Now you can see how beautiful it is. So when a teacher is approaching, how they are going forward, how they accept the robes, balls, and after coming in, they are preparing the seat and wash the feet. Now this is actually the proper monkhood. This is how a teacher being respected. Now if the students are thinking, okay, he's just a teacher, I mean, he may mind his own business, so I have to meditate. So if he's coming, let him come and let him go. I don't need to consider him. So this is not the proper mentality. But in the proper manner, these are mentioned actually in the Khandakas, where how when a teacher is approaching, how monks have to behave. When an elder monk is approaching, how the juniors have to behave. And even when a visiting monk is approaching a monastery, how the resident monks have to behave. All these things are well explained in the Khandakas, in the Chullavagga Pali, that is the book available in the Vinaya Pitaka. So these are mentioned. Suppose there is a visiting monk approaching a particular monastery, then the resident monks have to go forward, and if he is a senior monk, he has to be respected, and again the robes, balls, everything has to be accepted, his feet has to be washed. So likewise these manners are being stipulated in the setup. And the same thing is applied here. So when Buddha is approaching, so one monk is going forward, accepting the robes, preparing a seat, paying respect, maybe washing the feet. So likewise, all these typical hospitality being shown to the Buddha, to the teacher. And now Buddha start talking to Venerable Anuruddha, Venerable Nandiya, and Venerable Kimbila. And Buddha is telling, I hope you are all keeping well, Anuruddha. I hope you are comfortable. I hope you are not having any trouble getting alms food. And then Venerable Anuruddha answers, we are keeping well, Blessed One. We are comfortable. And we are not having any trouble getting alms food. Now the typical conversation, now Buddha starts asking how you all are doing. And then the others are answering, yes, we are doing well. And then Buddha further asks, I hope, Anuruddha, that you are all living in concord with mutual appreciation, without disputing, blending like milk and water, weaving each other with kindly eyes. You can see how beautifully Buddha explained the situation, how beautifully Buddha, in a way, exhibit the situation, what he want to have from monks. When couple of monks are living together, so how much, how well they have to maintain their peaceful abiding, whether they are having mutual appreciation, without any kind of dispute, living in concord, blending like milk and water. Now this is a very interesting simile Buddha giving. Now you know when you are putting some water to the milk, so it easily get blended. Now if you are putting some water to some oil, it is not blending. Oil may, if the density of the oil is less, then the oil may come up and the water may go down. They are not blending. But on the other hand, if you are putting water to milk, it quickly get blended properly. So Buddha is telling, so you have to live like that. You have to blend it together. You have to blend it together. You can't simply highlight yourself. You can't see that you are a special person. Rather, you have to blend with the team. Now you are a team, you are a Sangha. So why Buddha established the order of Sangha? Rather than trying to individually highlight each and every person, so Buddha have the Sangha. So that indicates, rather than trying to highlight each and every person, so you are living as a community. So when you are living in the community, you have to respect the community. You have to agree with the whatever the rules and regulation put forth with respect to the community. Rather than thinking you are an exception. So this is the thing that Buddha is highlighting here, and again viewing each other with kindly eyes. So rather than hating each other, rather than belittling each other, looking down each other, you have to see each other with kindly eyes. Now this, even though this very short passage, so it actually tells a lot. Now say for example, whenever we are living in a, say in a classroom, maybe in the office, maybe in your family, that you have to respect each other. And you have to sort of look at each other properly. Now sometimes what happens is, today, even though people are sort of having a little smile, say good morning in the morning, but they really don't have that amicable, amenable, heartfelt kind of loving kindness within their hearts. Simply for marketing reasons, probably they may be having the smile. Internally, probably they may be jealousy, sort of envious of the other person, but probably showing a smile. So this is the real kind of double standard sometimes people are showing. I mean, in front of the person, he may be having a slight smile, a beautiful smile. But when the person is not in front, really doing the opposite. So this is quite common everywhere. Now if you are in the office environment, probably you can understand certain people, even they may be, they know how to smile. But internally they don't really have that, what you call the proper heartfelt loving kindness. Instead they may be having kind of an ill will towards you, but simply showing a smile. That is why, I mean, it's very difficult to recognize people. But on the other hand, if you consider animals, they don't have that kind of a standard. They don't have that kind of a double standard. If they are hating you, they may still they show the hate. If they are loving you, they may show the loving kindness. And say for example, if you are sort of family with a pet, maybe a dog. So if this particular dog is angry, he will simply bark at you. He will simply show the anger. If he really loves you, it may show the love. It can't show kind of a love while keeping anger within his mind. But the people can do it. Human beings can do it. So that is the real difficulty when you are dealing with humans. Because they can show one thing while keeping a completely opposite thing within their minds. So actually now we are getting to another part. Now Venerable Anuruddha is explaining how cordially they are living together as three monks, how peacefully they are living, how helping each other. And Buddha, they are mentioning, how Anuruddha do you live like that? So Buddha want to know how they are doing it. Now Venerable Anuruddha is mentioning, it is, Venerable Sir, as to that, I think thus, it is a gain for me, it is a great gain for me that I am living with such companions in the holy life. I maintain bodily acts of loving kindness towards these venerable ones, both openly and privately. I maintain verbal acts of loving kindness towards them, both openly and privately. I maintain mental acts of loving kindness towards them, both openly and privately. Now this openly and privately is very interesting. Because sometimes, when in front of the person, you show one thing. When they are not in front of you, you show a completely opposite thing. So that is not the real kind of truthful or honest behavior. So if you really want to show loving kindness, even if the person is present, you have to show it. Even when the person is absent, you have to show it. So that will show the heart, the attitude within yourself, true attitude within yourself. But typically what happens is, we may show the loving kindness when the person is in front of you, but when he is going away, you may not have that kind of an attitude. But here Venerable Anuruddha very beautifully mentioned that he is maintaining loving kindness, not only bodily activities, he is having the verbal loving kindness, he is having the mental loving kindness, acts of loving kindness, even when the other two monks are present or when they are absent. And I consider, why should I not set aside what I wish to do and do what these venerable ones wish to do? Now this is a very interesting point. Actually, what happened when we are living in a community is that I want to highlight, I want to implement my plan, and I want everyone else to abide by that. Always that is the attitude. So I am the best, I am the chief, I am the master, I am the teacher, I am the eldest. So whatever the reason that you are using to highlight yourself, and now you want to implement your plan and all others to follow that plan. So that is the typical attitude we typically have. But Venerable Anuruddha say the complete opposite. He is mentioning, why should I not set aside what I wish to do? Now I have my own plans, I wish to do various things. But why can't I set aside all these and implement what others want to do? Do what these venerable ones wish to do. So basically he is abandoning his self-view, his conceit. He simply have to surrender, he simply have to sort of agree with others, simply keep aside his own plans, his own wishes, and simply be with the others really beautifully, cordially, peacefully. Then I set aside what I wish to do and do what these venerable ones wish to do. We are different in body, venerable sir, but one in mind. That's also a very beautiful statement. Even though there are three people, even though you can recognize three bodies here, you can see just one mind. And venerable, and then actually same information is repeated by Venerable Nandiya, same information is repeated by Venerable Kimbila. You can see how cordially they are living, and they are living, I mean, they are without any disputes, blending like milk and water, weaving each other with kindly eyes. And now actually Buddha get into some information with respect to the practice, and we probably discuss this next time. And with that, I like to conclude the Sutta teaching session today. Now I like to open the session for questions.
So if anyone is new to this group, welcome, and if you'd like to participate in the Q&A, you may raise your hand, or you may also send them via chat.
Okay, nobody. Okay, one is there, right?
Hi, Joseph. You may ask your question.
Thank you, Jennifer. Hello, Bhante.
Hi, how are you?
Tirun Saranai.
Yeah, Tirun Saranai.
Thank you very much for your discourse this evening. I found it very heartening and very generous of you to share the kind of inside look into the monk's life at the monastery, and how, because as an outsider, as a layperson, we kind of imagine, or I imagine, the monks are all getting along, and you don't have the kind of type of social conflicts that, say, we would have in the in the lay world, in the working world, and for you to share that, I find that it's very generous, because it's very humble, to do that. And in a way, you're not. It kind of just shows that you're true, in the sense you're not trying to prop yourself up that everything is perfect. You can sort of I can relate to your situation, and it was also very helpful for me, because I've had it in my own relations with my father, for example, who I had ongoing conflicts with, and I find very difficult to sort of move forward or have a relationship with, because it seems like at a certain point I just need to sort of walk away. But then I kind of feel that is that really the right thing to do? Anyway, I found it helpful to hear your experience and your situation and your advice. I found that very helpful, and I just wanted to thank you for sharing that. So I just wanted to make that statement.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you for sharing your thoughts. I'd like to invite Chita Devi for the next question.
Yes, thank you, Jennifer. Bhante, what I wanted to ask you or say or come in first, that even in the Buddha's time, these things happen. So these are common things that happen, as you said, within the human realm. Now these three other monks who were, you know, living like, you know, like blending like milk and water, I have also heard another line where in another sutta where the Buddha said these monks were having a retreat and they were not talking, but with their eyes they were communicating, and I believe he said they were blending like milk and honey, which was also a very nice blend, I thought. But these three monks, Bhante, isn't that a karmic sort of situation also, where they came together and they were living together in a beautiful manner? Isn't that a lot to do with the karma?
There could be, but we don't know that. Now, thing is, now whenever we get into a such kind of a situation, we don't know whether, I mean, the other persons who whom that we have to deal with are our friends in our previous lives as well. Sometimes they are not, sometimes they are. So likewise, I mean, there are maybe certain situations, even in the previous lives also, we may be going along, doing well with certain others, and even when they, when we meet them in this life, quite easily we can get along. So that is also possible, another reason. But the point is that we can't really verify that. So we can't really know whether we are having kind of a relationship, a long-lasting relationship coming from the previous lives even, that we can't verify. So as a result of that, we can't take that into the picture immediately. So, but anyway, the important thing is, from our side, are we able to maintain kind of an open-hearted, forgiving, compassionate, loving kindness attitude within ourselves?
Yes.
Because sometimes what happens is, say for example, say we are a person who is more critical on the practice. Say another person is not that critical. On such situation, probably we may get into conflicts. But on the other hand, if we are not so critical, but the other party is so critical on the practice, then even because of the practice, we get into certain conflicts. Maybe the other person want to talk with you, but you are not ready to give some time. You may be so much busy. You are having a lot of responsibilities. Then we are getting into conflicts. So likewise, there are various reasons for not being able to cope up, not being able to really live a kind of a peaceful life, because probably we are not ready to listen, probably we don't have time, we are not spending some time for the other person. So likewise, there may be various reasons, but if we can have kind of a attitude, okay, even when this person is present, I am having kind of a loving kindness towards him. Even when this person is not present, I am going to have the same kind of loving kindness towards this person. Now sometimes when we are thinking of vipassana, we sometimes ignore these things. But the point is, as we develop vipassana, our heart has to become more and more open. Rather than grasping so thoroughly, rather than grasping various fixed views, so our heart has to be spacious, not keeping any grudge. You know, the attitude of grasping is that we are keeping grudges, we are holding views, we are having preconceived ideas, we are keeping all these views within ourselves. We are not ready to be flexible. But on the other hand, the moment that we know, okay, there is no point of grasping, we have to continuously let go of, so then we are quite open-hearted, we are ready to listen, we have some time, and even while talking, while we are in a conversation, we are ready to recognize various defilements arising within ourselves, and how well we can communicate with another person without hurting another person, without showing off ourselves. So likewise, I mean, these are very subtle defilements operating within the conversation. Now say, for example, you are having a conversation with another person. When another person is telling a good point, now are you ready to accept that? Or do you want to really highlight your own view? Probably the other person's view may be really a brilliant idea, but you are a conceited person, you don't want to sort of give a chance for that. You don't want to accept that. You always want to show that you are the boss, you are the master. So you are the brilliant person. So this is the, I mean, here we can see very subtle defilements are operating in the picture. So while during the conversation, if we are able to recognize how these defilements are arising in our minds, probably actually in the conversation also we can do vipassana. In the conversation also we can recognize all these subtle defilements and can let go of those defilements. It's a very interesting area. Actually, it is not on the cushion that we can recognize defilements, but when we are doing a lot of interactions with the people, then we can recognize various defilements.
So, Bhante?
Yeah.
Can you hear me?
Yes, yes.
So, what I'm hearing from what you're saying is that there is a lot of effort from the person itself, the person who wants to have harmony, has to make and is able to do it only if there's a lot of effort and practice that comes from that person, right?
Yeah, I mean, the point is that the other person, I don't know, but how about ourselves, isn't it? I mean,
Yes. So
we can't expect the same amount of practice from the other person, but if we want to develop in our side, so we can make use of all these opportunities to recognize what are the defilements arising in our side. I think that is the only area that we can focus on. Because we can't really expect the same amount of practice or same amount of understanding from the other party every time. If we are getting that is great. So that is what actually has happened in the situation that we were just discussed related to Venerable Anuruddha and the others. Because they all are having the same kind of a mentality. They all are sort of very good people. But we can't expect the same setup every time. But at least if we can recognize various defilements arising in our mind, probably we have a chance.
Yes. So that's what has to come from our side.
Yes.
We can't expect we are the ones who have to do the hard work.
Exactly.
Because as somebody mentioned, there are conflicts between two personalities, two people within the family. Since we are going on this path now, we are the ones who have to make that effort and put that effort and try to change from within.
Exactly.
And accept the other person for what it is. And as you earlier said, you have to let it go, because later on maybe the person will understand and may, you know, realize that what they are doing was not the correct thing. Maybe.
Yeah.
Maybe not.
Yeah.
Yes, thank you, Bhante.
Yes.
Okay, thank you. I'd like to invite Don for the next question.
Thank you, Jennifer. Thank you, Bhante, for the talk today. I just have, Bhante, some comments about the talk today talk, as well as some advice to seek from you.
Yeah.
you know, Bhante, when I listened to the today's talk, I certainly realized I have been in that situation many times, that I thought I'm right. And I mean, even though I realized that later I was wrong, I would probably didn't admit. But nowadays I have changed a lot. Since I can see that I'm more and more, if it was 10 times before, now maybe it's 2 or 3 times. So right. I think I still have to improve in that sense much more. But I am on that path.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm happy about that. But there is something, you know, in a way, to me, it's related to today's talk as well, is that, as you mentioned, you know, in the today's world, that there's so many people that's not listening to each other, or not accommodating at least. So Bhante, I have been someone, you know, who was really trying to be on top of the news and this and that at one time, and then I have stopped that long ago. And anyway, Bhante, let me start my question like this. You know, at the moment, when we do meditation on walking or sitting, we encounter a sleepiness, which is considered as a good thing because our mind is getting still. So, now I like to apply this analysis to my day-to-day life. Just now, like what I said, previously I used to spend a lot of time looking at the news and on the things that is not necessary. I did stop that once about 6 months ago, and then I came back to it again. Now I have stopped again. So basically for 2 months now, I find that I have a lot of free time. You know, this time that now I'm concentrating more on to be mindful and to... It's basically my mind is free, I can see that.
Yeah.
Because I was doing all these unnecessary things.
Right.
So, Bhante, I wouldn't say I'm getting the sleepiness, but I can see there's a lot of empty space, empty time that I spend. How should I make use of that?
Yeah. On the other terms, how should I occupy that? Yeah. So that is the thing. Actually, we like various distractions. Actually, I mean, before we start meditation, the mindfulness practice, our minds really want to get engaged with various things. So that is how we are fond of grasping, we are fond of thinking, too much thinking, obsessive thinking, proliferation. Actually, if we don't have any kind of bodily activity or verbal activity to perform, then we start thinking. We start thinking in different manner, different ways, so that we are being occupied. So we always want to get distracted. So now from that kind of a mentality, from that kind of a behavior, now we are completely switching to a different kind of a mentality where we are now having some time. We are having some free time. We are having some space. And not only within the body and the words, but even in the mind, we are now find space. Now, probably you can recognize there are spaces without any thought. So mind is completely silent. Mind is kind of calm, relaxed, and no agitation, no thoughts even. So the problem is, why can't simply live in that kind of a situation? Why can't we simply dwell in that mental silence? So that is where we need to train ourselves. So we are people who are trained, or rather ill-trained or misguided by too much thinking, too much involvement and too much doing. But now we are reprogramming ourselves, correcting ourselves, not to do things, not to mentally proliferate, rather to simply abide in silence, be in the silence, enjoy the inner silence. So that is where the Buddha, if you can remember, now Buddha sometimes again and again go for a retreat. Now you may think, okay, where Buddha is going for retreat? Now Buddha actually, now Buddha being the teacher, he has spent years of time to accomplish his Buddhahood. Now he has a lot of responsibilities. But time to time he is taking a break. He is going for a retreat. He is telling the monks, Monks, I am not going to teach anymore. For 3 months, I am not going to teach. I am not going to meet anyone. So do not allow any householder to come and meet me. Do not allow any monks to come and meet me. Only the monk who is taking some food for me, some pindapatham for me, is allowed to meet me. So sometimes Buddha alone may going on pindapatha and looking after himself. Or sometimes he is asking another monk to bring him food, and only that monk is allowed to see him. For 3 months, he is living in seclusion. So why he is doing that? So basically, he may have a lot of other responsibilities, lot of tasks, but now he is taking a break. Why? So in a way, he is giving an extremely good example. It is not the too much involvement, it is not the too much engagement with various activities, but how about having complete mental silence, living in seclusion, living alone, cut off from the society? So this is very much like kind of an escape, but time to time this actually shows, when Buddha is showing it, it indicates kind of a lesson. So this mental seclusion is not a simple thing. So our minds are, as I mentioned, ill-trained to get involved too much, get engaged with too much. But as we continue our practice, we may find out, okay, now mind likes the seclusion. Mind likes to stay alone. Mind even can spend time without even a single thought. So if we are able to sort of appreciate that, if we are able to dwell in that kind of a situation, then probably, slowly, that becomes our norm. So rather than having a very talkative, ruminating kind of a mind, how about having a mind which is a silent mind, which is only reacting or responding when it is only necessary? Not every time, but only when it is invited. Only when it is necessary, it is reacting or responding. So that is the kind of a switching that we have to happen, which you have to have. So that is where Buddha is guiding us, where you are able to have a completely sort of mind under control. Having a very calm, serene kind of a mind. When it is necessary, you can use the mind faculty to think wisely, and then get the benefit of that wise thinking. And when it is not necessary, keeping the mind completely in silence. So this is what actually highlighted in the, Vitakka Santana Sutta. So you are having the complete control of the thinking. When it is necessary, you are thinking. When it is not necessary, you are keeping the mind in complete silence. And the important thing is, then only we can recognize the subtle defilements. So especially the conceit I am. So with the desire that we are having to highlight as a person, the very subtle defilements like I am a person, I want to continue, I want to live further. So likewise, very, very subtle defilements that we have are only visible when we are maintaining this silence mind for a long time. So therefore Buddha highlights, time to time getting that kind of a break, and Buddha has given an example by doing that. And therefore I think we, rather than occupy our mind, if we have a chance, now suppose you are traveling by a train, a long distance, say a couple of hours, so how about keeping your mind in silence? It's a very, very, very good opportunity we can have to train the mind. While all the others are talking and shouting and everything, how about you having a very silent mind? It's a kind of a real, I mean, marvelous, opportunity we have, if we can train the mind like that. Then it is a mind which is not troubling us. It is a mind which is a blessing to us. So I think that is the direction that we need to look forward. So I think rather than trying to occupy the mind, let's have a kind of a silent mind which is not disturbing us. Actually, it doesn't mean that when it is necessary we can't operate, we can't talk, something like that. Rather, the mindfulness wisdom will guide us, telling, okay, this is the time that you need to talk, this is the time that you need to work, this is the time that you need to be silent. So likewise, that internally, that kind of a guidance may come based on mindfulness and wisdom.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, I think it really applicable, because that is how I feel. I mean, with the example of this, I probably spent one or two hours before reading about the world, and now I realize the world there even without I doing it. Yes.
Thank you, Bhattu. Thank you for that question.
Okay, yeah.
Thank you, Jennifer. Abhisarai Bande. My question is, sometimes there are circumstances, or maybe most of the time, in where we have to kind of participate in fairly unwholesome acts. Like, you know, it is going to create a lot of defilements in our lay life. So how does one live kind of isolate yourself from that situation? You have to go along, you have to please the other members, but you know, you don't want to, but how does one do that? Can you please advise?
Yeah. So actually, that is where even today's discussion is quite valuable, because we can't every time live alone. We have to live with others. We have to be with others. We have to coordinate with others. On such situation, how we as a person operate. So sometimes the situation is that we have to operate as a person, we have to sometimes advise another person, we have to play our role, we probably have to play an administrative role. So those are also there. But on the other hand, sometimes we have to surrender, we have to accept someone else's view, we have to accept someone else's view better than our view. So likewise, we have to be in a very grounded, truthful, honest kind of a mental setup. Then I feel we can coordinate. Because most of the time why conflicts happen is because we as a person want to highlight ourselves. We probably have a particular view and we want to win that view. And we don't want to listen to another person. We don't have even time or space for another person. And we can't even understand their view, and we don't understand their emotions. But on the other hand, when we develop a fair amount of mindfulness, so we start reading others. So that is something beautiful, because we start reading ourselves, we start looking at our own thoughts, our own emotions. And as a result of that, we get more understanding about ourselves, and it leads even to understand another person. So we first has used ourselves as a kind of a mechanism, as a tool to recognize, to develop our mind, and then that understanding can be applicable even to understand another person. So then it is quite easy how another person is operating, how another person would take various views, how another person's mind may pick up various defilements depending on the situation. So likewise, these situations, these conditions are probable to arouse various defilements. Now, say for example, when you are in a conversation with another person, if you are able to be mindful about your own mind, your own defilements, then you can apply that understanding to the other person as well. So if he is in such kind of a situation, if he is in such kind of a discussion, then that person's mind also is probable to have those defilements. And he, if he is not mindful, he may subject to those defilements. He may undergo those defilements. He become a victim of those defilements. Now, when we understand that, now he is under the influence of defilements, probably, rather than taking it personally, how about looking at it in that angle? Okay, this person, due to various and conditions, now he is under the influence of defilements. He couldn't understand that. He simply have become a victim of those defilements. Now that is the actual situation now every time happens. Either we become a victim of defilements, or either another person becoming a victim of defilements. So, but unfortunate thing is, rather than recognizing defilements as defilements, we take things personally. We consider, okay, I am here, I am a person. He is there, he is a person. So we are putting this person into the picture, I into the picture. Now the situation is very difficult. But if we are able to recognize, okay, these are the defilements operating. A person is not mindful about it. His mind is not capable of recognizing them. His mind is not capable of withdrawn from the defilements. Rather, the mind becomes a victim of defilements. So then actually we are in a good position. So likewise, if we are able to understand the situation and put ours, understand from their point of view, I think we can cope up with the situation.
Yes, thank you.
Theruvan sir. Theruvan sir.
Yeah,
I think we have spent almost 1.5 hours, so it's after 2 weeks break. So with that, actually I like to conclude today's Dhamma discussion, or this Sutta teaching session. Whatever the merits that we have accrued through this discussion, let's share with our past relatives, all the celestial beings and whoever in need of merits, and let's wish these merits help us also to attain path, fruition, Nibbana. Let's recite the traditional verses. එතාවතා ච අම්හෙහි සම්බතං පුඤ්ඤ සම්පදං සබ්බේ දේවා අනුමෝදන්තු සබ්බ සම්පත්ති සිද්ධියා එතාවතා ච අම්හෙහි සම්බතං පුඤ්ඤ සම්පදං සබ්බේ භූතා අනුමෝදන්තු සබ්බ සම්පත්ති සිද්ධියා එතාවතා ච අම්හෙහි සම්බතං පුඤ්ඤ සම්පදං සබ්බේ සත්තා අනුමෝදන්තු සබ්බ සම්පත්ති සිද්ධියා ආකාසට්ඨාච බුම්මට්ඨා දේවානාග මහින්దికා පුඤ්ඤන්තං අනුමෝදිත्वा චිරං රක්ඛන්තු සාසනං ආකාසට්ඨාච බුම්මට්ඨා දේවානාග මහින්దికා පුඤ්ඤන්තං අනුමෝදිත्वा චිරං රක්ඛන්තු දේශනං ආකාසට්ඨාච බුම්මට්ඨා දේවානාග මහින්దికා පුඤ්ඤන්තං අනුමෝදිත्वा චිරං රක්ඛන්තු මම් පරං ඉදං වෝ ඥාතීනං හෝතු සුඛිතා හොන්තු ඥාතයෝ ඉදං වෝ ඥාතීනං හෝතු සුඛිතා හොන්තු ඥාතයෝ ඉදං වෝ ඥාතීනං හෝතු සුඛිතා හොන්තු ඥාතයෝ ඉමිනා පුඤ්ඤ කම්මේන මාමේ බාල සමාගමෝ සතං සමාගමෝ හෝතු යාව නිබ්බාන පත්තියා ඉමිනා පුඤ්ඤ කම්මේන මාමේ බාල සමාගමෝ සතං සමාගමෝ හෝතු යාව නිබ්බාන පත්තියා ඉමිනා පුඤ්ඤ කම්මේන මාමේ බාල සමාගමෝ සතං සමාගමෝ හෝතු යාව නිබ්බාන පත්තියා සාදු සාදු සාදු